Welcome to the Startup Showcase. I'm your host, Scott Catoon, and this is TechNerd Live from WGN Radio, where Chicago's top tech founders and entrepreneurs come to share their story. Sitting next to me is Sean Frelich.
That's right.
We've officially just moved over, and I call you by your American name, Frelich, even though you know it's Frelich.
I do know that.
I say it every
show
time.
Show business.
Show business. You make your own name. So anyway, you're the captain of the feed, the big cheese when it comes to the feed. So this is your second co-hosted segment.
That's right. It's good to be back. I had a lot of fun last week.
Yeah. So I had to tell you, we play your segments on the Saturday Live show, and we've been getting good hits. People like it. They like the dash of weird.
That's good. Yeah. No, it's the same thing I heard from my family. They like that extra splash. I think that perks people's ears up a little bit more, and I'm excited because it's the biggest platform I've had to deliver my dish of news.
Well, I can tell you from someone, I've only been doing this for a little while. I mean, it's been a couple of years, so it's by no means a long pro. But I hear that when they don't like it, you never find out that you just stop being on the show.
Uh-huh.
That's how that usually goes. It's just sort of the end of it. So as long as I'm talking about it, you must be doing well. So congrats, and I'm glad to have you on the Saturday show. It's awesome.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, I don't want to waste any more time. We've got someone who's way more fun to talk to than you and even me in this case. Katie Lynch sitting here. She is, do we call it the co-founder of Codeverse?
Yes.
So you're sharing the spotlight. You're not going to take the whole founder title. I just take it. When I'm in front of people, I just take the title. It's all mine. I'm the founder.
Just everything in life.
Founder, CEO, mom, dad, cousin, brother. I'm everybody's everything. No, but seriously, this is so cool to have you here because the unveiling essentially just happened.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
10 days ago just happened.
Yeah. So I've known about this going on in the background for a while. You obviously have been working on this for how long? Has Codeverse been kind of on the stealth mode?
Wow, 15 months.
Yeah, okay, so 15 months this thing has been operating underneath this veil, and you lifted it off, and I found out by seeing a press release, but I also found out driving on the street and saw a billboard for it and was like, oh, Codeverse is ready to roll.
We're everywhere. We are literally everywhere you look. We're in your sleep.
Well, I mean, I don't know about that yet, but it's certainly heading that way. And so I guess before we kind of jump into your story and Codeverse and everything, what exactly is Codeverse? What is the mission behind Codeverse?
So the mission is to teach a billion kids to code.
That's it? Just a billion?
Yep, just a billion. You know,
that's not
well, in fact, we won't stop there. It'll go beyond.
I was going to say, I wanted to ask, like, if you get to a billion, because I mean, I'm going to send you to China and come home in a couple of weeks and, you know, a billion kids have learned how to code.
Yeah.
But so how are you doing this? What is the what makes Codeverse so different and why is it caught? It seems like it's caught fire. People are you know, obviously yeah. It came out of stealth. And so the nice thing about it is that you got a lot done before it came out. It wasn't like a startup normally like, well, we just launched the company. Here's the papers. And then that's it. I think you came out with a full deck with this. So what is it that you guys do in particular that sort of make you so different?
Yep, great question. So Codeverse in a nutshell is the world's first fully interactive coding school and educational tech platform for kids between 6 and 12 years old. So we're building essentially state-of-the-art, beautiful, hackable classrooms for children. But then we've also built a real programming language that teaches kids to code too. And so children will not only be able to use that within the physical studio to build apps and games and projects and really whatever they want, but they'll also be able to use the language KidScript to be able to program any object within the studio. So we've got like robot arms and drones and laser cutters and all sorts of cool stuff.
That's awesome. So is it like pictures of crayons and stuff? Like what is the KidScript? What does it look like? Can I use it? my intellect sometimes as a child. So, I mean, I feel like I could use this. I know, Sean, you could probably use KidScript to be able to do this stuff.
I would need it, yeah. I mean, obviously, they didn't teach any of us about coding in elementary school.
No, I mean, I didn't really learn anything, actually. But anyway.
Yeah, that's a much bigger problem.
This is true.
Yeah, sure. So I'll explain it. So, and the other co-founders of Codeverse are my husband. Originally started this with my husband. And then Dave Arrells, our third co-founder. And he was originally, he was the first engineer at Belly, which was Craig's company before starting this one with me. And so really the real reason why we built KidScript was because you look at the languages that are out there today, right? The most popular languages for adults, like Python and JavaScript and Ruby and Visual Basic. And the truth is that those languages are just too advanced for children, especially when you think of like a six-year-old kind of learning coding for the first time. And so what we did was we took the core concepts of those languages, So like if statements, variables, loops, and we basically created a kid-friendly syntax around those concepts.
Very
so it's
cool.
Basically a super easy to read, super easy to write, kid-friendly language.
So, I mean, you obviously did a lot of user research. I saw tons of Facebook pictures of you in classrooms with kids and sort of watching them go through this process. What were your, I guess your, well, I have two questions for you. The first one is, what was it like the first time you realized like what the problem was? What was that disconnect that you saw the kids looking at? I assume that you were watching them trying to learn how to code the traditional way, and it was like, there's a dysfunction here. What was that first, I guess, first?
I think there's a couple things. I think there's, like, learning to code for the first time is quite daunting, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
it's quite,
like, I'm 32, yeah? And even, like, if I was to start coding for the first time now, I'd be like, oh my goodness, this is quite hard.
Yeah.
And so what we found is that for a child, like, you've constantly got to keep kids curious and engaged and excited. And that was one of the biggest reasons why we wanted to launch these studios. The first one's going to be opening in July in Lincoln Park, but the goal is to have like 50 of them across the nation within the next 5 or so years.
Yeah.
And we believe that's the best way to learn to code, right? Is in a very immersive, engaging, social, collaborative environment where kids are just building cool stuff, whatever they want.
Well, you know, I guess I want to kind of take over to Sean here for a minute, because I mean, you guys, you're a little bit younger than me.
Not by much,
but I feel like it's funny though. There is like a little, I don't know how to describe it. I guess there's a little bit of a divide there because my generation was cursive and there was like no internet and things like that until the very end. We had our like little IMAX and things that came. I remember the IMAX with the blue and the pink backs and things
that. Yep.
That was like the very end of high school. And in college, Facebook came out when I was, a sophomore going into junior year of college. That's when Facebook came out. And so it got to us basically as I was heading into my junior year. So I didn't, you know, we had like, I was like a hybrid. I had half of my life on a little Nokia brick phone and the other half of my life growing on this like college network based Facebook thing. So I feel like for me, technologically, I really did have to step, I guess, in grad school, get into it and challenge myself to learn how to code, and now I can do some websites and things like that. But like I had to really, it was tough. And so I look over to you, Sean, where you were in high school and college, you probably had Facebook.
Yes.
And so you kind of come from everything is digital, and the knowledge that like when I'm learning, and I guess I'm going to circle back to you with this as well. Mm-hmm. When I'm learning, I still have to tell myself or remind myself when I write this out that it's going to end up digital. Versus you, who I think from the very beginning, everything that you learn and see, you're immediately in your head. You're like, oh, it's obviously going to be digital. This is going to be something that gets, you know.
Yeah, like how that wave kind of hit you in college.
Yeah.
It hit me in junior high when MySpace blew up, and I was on Facebook in high school, and I got a cell phone in high school. And now I think that is, as it hit you in college, it hit me in junior high, it's getting younger and younger.
Exactly.
So to me, it's hard to wrap my brain around a six-year-old being into coding. Like, how do you pitch a six-year-old on coding?
Yeah, I mean, it's fun, it's engaging, right? Here's the truth about young kids, right? Is they love to break things. They love making mistakes. They love learning. They're super curious.
It's like our entire ecosystem.
But that's the thing about coding is that it is fun. It is rewarding. You know, it's quite gratifying being able to sit there behind a screen and build something amazing and call it your own and then share that with your friends and family. Whether that's like, you know, creating your own version of Tetris or building a cool app or you know, just watching like an alien walk across the screen, and knowing that you built that is just, it's so rewarding.
Yeah. So I guess that was the second question I was kind of going to ask you on this was, what was that moment like when you got to see them actually start using KidScript and see it working? Like, what was, describe to me that feeling. Like, I wish I pulled it off the computer, because there's an actual picture that just came to my head from your Facebook page. I'm not creeping, but
you are.
I'm creeping a little bit, but there's a picture I remember seeing you like with your hands on your head like this, and I wanted to think, I almost thought in my head, like, that must have been the moment that you saw like a kid use your product for the first time.
Yeah. And this was, so the first school that we went into was like, you know, 12, 13 months ago. Yeah. And it was just one of the most amazing experiences of my life, to just put it candidly.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just so awesome to see a class of like 28-year-olds sit there and just be so laser focused on building whatever they wanted. And we would see kids, like there was this one wee boy, 8 years old.
I love how you say that. There's a wee boy.
He built a game. Honestly, he built a game in like 20 minutes. And he ran up to Craig and I, and he's like, look what I've done, look what I've built. And mind you, what he'd built was, I mean, it literally was an alien on the screen, and there was like a couple blocks, like kind of falling from the sky kind of a thing. But it was like, wow, like you did this, and you did this in such a short amount of time. And he like shared it with his mom, like sent it to her cell phone so that she could see it.
How old is this kid?
He's 8 years old.
So to put that in perspective, he's 8 years old. He's coding a game. I'm not even going to say what I was doing at 8 years old. It's probably just like picking my nose. That's probably what I'm doing. It's probably what I'm doing now, to be honest. But
not much
we, hey, yeah. We all were. Let's be honest.
So junior high, I'm thinking back to junior high. I'm playing Oregon Trail, and I'm in a this age is everything. I'm in a keyboarding class where they're teaching you how to type on a computer because they needed to do that then. And I hated it, and I was cheating, and I would be sitting there like with a mirror, like trying to like look under the board so I could cheat when I was doing my keyboarding. That was me in junior high. There's an 8-year-old out there who's coding his own games on a computer. Blows my mind.
It's awesome.
That is
I'm
so
telling
cool.
you, coding is the universal language of the future.
It is.
It is so important for a multitude of reasons.
It is, and I think it's also, and this is, we're going like way off topic on this, and I apologize ahead of time. But and I've talked about this with my anti-millennial sentiment that occurs a lot. That there's this feeling of never having been tested, never having been not rewarded for everything you do, and there's this feeling of like, oh, I can't do any wrong, everything's great. And there's an entitlement that I think a lot of millennials have. And I actually think that among developers and things, this might be the secret weapon for combating that entitlement, because there's nothing in this world more frustrating, and if you have never coded, try it once. There's nothing more frustrating than one character off in a line of code blows the entire thing up. It's gone. And so the idea that as a child you learn to bear with that frustration hours and hours and hours trying to find that missing link, I think that's actually a really good learning experience and lesson, and you're totally right that the language of the future, universal language for everyone, is going to be different languages among code.
Which
is kind of scary because it makes us feel even more robotic.
Right.
But yeah, but it's good. So I guess tell me, the last thing I'm going to have on this here is tell me your vision. Mm-hmm. And I'm talking like way down. What is the vision, your main hope for what this accomplishes? After a billion kids have learned to code, how do you think, put it this real simple. What is Codeverse's impact on the world when we look back?
Yeah, great question. So maybe I'll talk to you a little bit about like what the plan is, and then how I feel like this really impacts the world. So the plan is we're launching this first location in July in Lincoln Park. It's on 819 West Eastman Street. But the goal is within the next 18 months, we'll have 3 additional Codeverse locations throughout Chicago. And then in the next 5 years, we'll have 1 Codeverse studio in every major metropolitan area of the U.S. The goal ultimately, though, is to be international, to go global.
Sure.
And the way that we do that is, you know, through brick and mortar, but obviously through SaaS. And our SaaS platform is going to be launching at the beginning of next year. So that is essentially going to allow kids to be able to use KidScript at home in the comfort of their own homes.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah. But the goal, you know, ultimately is, and I alluded to this a little bit when I said that coding is great for a multitude of reasons. I mean, we're setting kids up so that they understand technology, understand how it works, understand how computers talk to each other, right?
Yep.
But also setting them up for future jobs. Like, you see all these articles come out now that say by the year 2020, there's going to be over 1 million unfilled tech jobs. And you just kind of sit there and you say to yourself, well, who's filling those roles? Right? Who's filling these like jobs in the future? Like, kids need to have these skills now to be able to set them up for many of these roles in the future, whether they become an engineer or not. You know, if a child says, okay, well, I want to become a musician, well, they're still going to need to learn technical skills.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, honestly, you look at like just every job now. I mean, now every job, I remember, I guess, again, man, this is like the crushing on my age thing. I don't know what's going on today. I feel like I'm just like going down memory lane.
Because I understand where you're coming from. Well, yeah, being 32 and growing up in a world where, digital was only really a thing for us when it was like post high school, right, or around college.
Now it's a way of life.
Now it is a way of life. I mean, you see kids now at like 2 years old, they're learning how to swipe before they're learning how to turn pages in a book.
So,
and that's okay.
No, it's, I think,
you know,
it's
that's
great.
Just the way,
I think it's
just
great.
The way of the world.
Because like I look at like when I first got out of college, and I remember reading on the job applications, like you had to know how to use Microsoft, you know, Suite. You had to know how to use certain things, Adobe Suite, whatever. And now it's like, ugh, you don't know how to use PowerPoint? Like, where did you grow up, under a rock? And I feel like coding is going to be that thing. Like, it's going to be like, what languages do you speak? Well, I'm bilingual. I speak, you know, Spanish and JavaScript and English. Like, you know, it's, there's going to be this sort of like expectation that you have a certain set of languages in the code world, as well as, I was joking with my Spanish, no one laughed, but it's okay, with my multi-bilingual. But you're going to have to know those things as like a basis, I think.
Yeah, for sure. And this is actually, you've kind of triggered my memory. You know, one additional thing about KidScript, which makes it really cool and unique, is we've made it so that it's a gateway into other languages, right? So if a kid masters KidScript, it's incredibly easy for them to transition then into Ruby, JavaScript, Python, and other languages.
And this was my next question.
Useful.
Yeah, well, that was my next question, to say, how do you differ from a lot of the other things? And I feel like that's the one thing that has been a complaint.
Yes.
That they teach you a... it's okay, so for those who are familiar with coding, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Those who are not really familiar with this, the main thing ends up being that they would... Essentially synthesize all of the different popular coding languages into one kid-friendly version. So you'd end up learning bits and pieces and could do things, but it wasn't very, you can't build on it.
Mm-hmm.
This is something where you can literally use this as a segue into learning Ruby, learning all of the different types.
Nailed it.
Yeah,
yep.
That's awesome. Very cool.
Thank you so much. We're super jazzed about it.
We're going to have you. You've got so many growth plans ahead of you. I plan, you're going to be on the Saturday show talking about the first location. I want you on the show when that opens up.
Definitely.
I want you to bring one of the code kids in and
definitely.
They can talk about it.
I would love to. Let's do it.
And then you let me know when you guys are in new cities. And let's keep doing. You're just welcome to come back anytime you want is essentially the deal. And we will be in touch because we're working on some issues and some initiatives with children and CPS as well. So that's another area where I would love to get you guys more involved, and I'm sure you're already, you know, thinking that direction. So
very cool. Thank you so much.
Of course, where do people go to learn more about Codeverse? And you, because you're at the end of the day, we didn't even get into this. You're Social Katie.
I am still.
You're still Social Katie, even though that's been sold and things. You're still a very popular gal.
Oh, thank you so much.
You have tons of followers and stuff. So where do people follow you and Codeverse?
Yep. So to follow me. Well, there's a number of places, but I spend a lot of time on Twitter. So it's just a hashtag is just at, sorry, not my hashtag. My handle is just at the Katie Lynch, KatyLynch.
How many followers do you have there now?
Oh, God. I'm not sure. I think about 11,000.
Yeah, it's up there.
But then Codeverse, to find out more about Codeverse, that's just go to codeverse.com. You'll see that we have like packages for weekly classes, and then we also have summer camps. There's four different packages to choose from, and it starts around $125 a month.
Awesome. So cool to have you in here. We're going to have you back. This is going to be great. Thanks so much. Sean, I'm going to spin back over to you here. I know we've got some pretty cool stuff coming up on the feed. I want to know more about what we've been missing out on.
Yeah, so here we go, about to dish out the latest edition. I'm Sean Frelick, host of Technori's The Feed, where I dish out top tech news with a bonus slice of weird. Let's feed. Is it just me, or is culture becoming more narcissistic? I wouldn't know. I only think about myself. But Chicago's startup Upshow works in the selfie business and recently raked in $1.5 million from Chicago investors. Here's what Upshow does. The system allows bars and restaurants to display selfies taken at the location for everyone to see on all the TVs, which results in more social media traffic, more time spent at the location, and more drinks being bought for that sexy thing at the other end of the bar. Did I mention that one of the investors is a former Playboy CEO? Maybe love of one's own image could outsell pining for the flesh of another one day. This week in Going Too Far news is Burger King for tricking your Google Home device into selling you burgers. Burger King is running a 15-second ad that says, "Okay, Google, what's the Whopper burger?" which is meant to trigger your Google smart speaker into talking about the Whopper and peer pressuring you into buying one. Burger King has a reputation for pushing the envelope in its marketing, which usually succeeds in creating a media blitz, which I've currently fallen victim to. Touche, Burger King. Google had no part in the BK hijink, which triggered a discussion about companies manipulating our smart technology and programming us to be better consumers. Too bad clever ads can't hide the fact that Burger King is the third option for hungover people who can't find McDonald's or Wendy's. Sorry, it had to be said. This week's Technori shout-out goes to the hyper-masculine Dude Wipes, which are flushable sanitary wipes meant for the derriere and other stink spots on a dude. How do you know if you're a dude is my big question. However, the Dude Wipes team appeared on Shark Tank, and Mark Cuban invested $300,000 in these booty wipes, which are sold in over 8,000 stores across the United States. And I'm happy for Dude Wipes, and I'm sorry for any man that previously felt emasculated by using wipes because using wipes made you feel like a baby. Wah! Yes, wipes are a better alternative to paper, and yes, America should adopt the bidet. Sorry, Charmin. Okay, I'm fed. Find me on technori.com every Monday night for our video show. It'll be very lit.
That was awesome. Thank you so much for doing that. That was, man, you're getting better all the time. It's like more and more animated. I'm seeing.
Just trying to get a little punchier with it.
That's quite a punch. I have to tell you, though, one criticism. You left out White Castle. What are you doing?
White Castle's not in the top three. I just
went
on the sales.
Are you kidding? Well, I don't care
about
the
fan,
real numbers
I'm
are.
A fan of the steam slider.
It's White Castle and then immediately Dude Wipes. That's how that goes. And the Dude Wipes guys.
I see a partnership.
Oh, we had the Dude Wipes guy on the show, and he's awesome. The whole group is awesome. They actually work out of Soho, so that's pretty cool. So if anyone needs any Dude Wipes, just go to Soho. He's just chilling there. But anyway, that was awesome. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Of course. Watch this episode and more at technori.com. Download the podcast on iTunes and stay connected by following us on Twitter and Facebook at Technori. You can follow me at Katoon. Boom. That's a wrap.